You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Why, hello there, and welcome to episode 8 of Fly on the Call, Candid Conversations on Music. This week is a super fun one. Our guest today is Steve. That's the band name, with a lowercase s and a period. Their short songs, strange titles, and wacky lyrics are backed up by raw pop-punk energy and an encouraging undertone. Their debut full-length is 10 songs, but clocks in at just under 15 minutes. The title, You Can Do This Too, is meant to serve as a reminder to everyone, but especially marginalized individuals, that they have artistic worth and should not let anything stop them from chasing their goals. The album is out on November 8th via I Surrender Records, and is certainly worth your quarter of an hour, though you're sure to return to it time and time again. Until then, sit back and enjoy this chat. So I guess if we could just start by having you introduce yourself for podcast listeners so they're able to kind of differentiate your voice.
Okay. Hi, I'm Nikki. This is my voice.
Hi, I'm Kai. I use they, them pronouns. This is my voice.
Rad. So when I was like reading your bio, it kind of struck me as like oddly similar to the Wonder Years, how you kind of started as like a side project and wrote your first songs in order to be able to like play a gig. And I know they eventually kind of like, they had a similar kind of like jokey style as I guess you do in some of your songs. And they kind of like eventually wrote that kind of side of their career off. I was wondering if that's kind of something that you see as a potential happening in the future.
Interesting. Well, I never knew that the Wonder Years started as a side project. And I've listened to that band a lot. And I never knew that.
I thought they just wanted to write about like going to space and being pirates.
They do have a goofy element though that I wouldn't say is something that inspired anything necessarily about us. If anything, we were more inspired by like the 30-second, 40-second Blink-182 songs. Complete jokes. But that's interesting, though. Do we see ourselves like that? I don't know. I don't want to.
I don't think
anything.
that was an intention.
Yeah, definitely not an intention.
But it's interesting. You found that parallel. But you know, we didn't really go into it going like, oh yeah, let's be like the Wonder Years right now.
No, absolutely not. We definitely do play basements, and they do like talking about playing basements. So yeah,
and we get our fair share of Philadelphia living. So
yeah, You know what? We are trying to be the Wonder Years.
Yeah, we are.
How did that kind of like jokey element of the band kind of end up happening?
We don't take that many things very seriously. We're taking it more seriously as we're navigating this whole industry, of course, now. But the main purpose and the function of us playing together as a band is just because we like it. We like to have fun. And you're correct. We only started playing shows or writing music because we wanted to start playing shows. Then as that started taking off in some way, I guess you can say we kind of started getting a little more serious about it.
I guess you could say it's like we were all in more serious bands prior to, and that probably was a retaliation against that mentality that we started the basement scene with. And it was really refreshing because I didn't join Steve until October, but I've been producing and hanging out the entire time. So I got to like see them like, you know, really blossom and help out. But I think it's more like a retaliation against like people being tryhards, and they just liked having fun and being goofy, and that was like the big appeal of Steve at the time.
I should mention when Nikki said October, he means October 2018, and you're coming up on a whole year now.
Oh my god! Oh,
awesome. And I guess as far as like you mentioned, like more serious projects before Steve started. Were they kind of like stylistically similar, and how did Steve kind of end up starting to come together?
Well, okay, so Eric, our bass player, was the vocalist for a metalcore band, and then he hit up me, and I was playing solo at the time, which was more kind of like ambient sound solo kind of stuff. And then he hit up our drummer Zach, who was playing in a shoegaze band. So the three of us were not intending to create some sort of pop punk necessary, or we didn't come from playing in pop punk groups at all. Nick, however, though, played in another band that is, I don't know. What do you think?
It's like pop punk, but like, you know, people say alt rock now to not be pop punk. So it was like that kind. Like, if you take Saves a Day and those early bands like that and try to do that.
We've definitely all listened to some sort of like for instance, like when we first started the band, we really wanted to sound like Spray Nerd or Title Fight, almost like the earlier Title Fight kind of stuff. I don't think that still holds up though.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the lines in either like your bio or like the press release was you're pop punk, but not that kind of pop punk, which I feel like makes a lot of sense somehow.
It does. I mean, there's a weird distinction in pop punk where if you say you're a pop punk band, they might think like the Wonder Years or
even All Time Low.
Or All Time Low, which also you can consider pop punk.
But
when
sure.
We were thinking of it, I don't know, because then you could also say Superchunk is kind of pop punk, and they're not in that realm at all.
For sure. Yeah, and I mean, like, so many of, like, the older bands, like NoFX and stuff, were, like, considered pop punk when they started out, but now I think most people just consider them as, like, the forebearers of punk.
Yes, yeah, yes, sure. Exactly. I agree with that.
So it's like so interesting to me how genre is like kind of constantly a changing thing.
I think it's I don't know if it's any better or any good. I think it's just it's turning into the blanket term, for instance, like how alt rock is almost a blanket term in some ways. But yeah, sometimes pop punk has a negative connotation, so that's why there is a line in whatever you read that says not that kind of pop punk.
And I mean, like, stylistically, I think the reason that I connected to, like, Ankle Biter when I first heard it, it, like, reminded me a lot of, like, the first Prince Daddy and the Hyena EP, and also kind of, like, some of the Posture and the Grizzly stuff. Like, who were kind of your inspirations as far as when you were writing the LP?
For me, this is an interesting question. So the way that we write songs is that one of us will come up with pretty much the song itself and then bring it to the group and then present that. And then we all kind of get involved. So there's three of us who have written songs on this record. And for me personally, I'm very much influenced by Motown chord progressions, which is not very, and then you put that through a guitar and through some distortion pedals, and then you get something that kind of like how you're saying sounds a little bit P Daddy-esque and, you know, Posture and Grizzly-esque kind of sounds.
And I just like play leads mostly, and I like really gainy sounds that almost sound synthy. So that was my inspiration. It's just, I'm not the best guitar player in the world, but I can make some noise a little bit.
And yeah, I don't think we have any sort of bands or artists that we've particularly said like, oh, that's something I would like to create. It always ends up sounding something like that, though.
Oh, for sure. Like a couple songs could be considered like Zach's songs, for example. Like Zach's a drummer mainly and plays guitar, but only knows a certain amount of chords. So Zach's songs sound more like the Blink songs or the Spraniard kind of songs.
Yes, yeah.
You know, but then Kyle is musically all over the place, and I can never really pinpoint it until the end of the song. I go, oh, okay, I get this.
Yeah, I listen to a lot. Like I listen to a lot of everything. I feel this morning, my whole drive to work, I was just listening to 2014 SZA, and I was like, wow, this is great. So yeah, stylistically, I think we're all over on the map, and for some way, we get the sound that we have now.
Yeah, and yesterday I was listening to Ruiner. It's a hardcore band from Baltimore. So
there's some hardcore influence in there. But I think I like to throw in like a little breakdown thing just because I think it's silly.
For sure, yeah, and I mean, you mentioned kind of like the songwriting process, and how you kind of like. One of you will bring something in, and then do you guys kind of like jam it out together? Does it come together more in like the rehearsal space, or like how does that kind of work?
It depends. This record in particular, it's these weird. Songs took about 2 years to get them all together. And there's like two more, I think, that just never made the cut on the current iteration of the record. So for instance, I was writing songs in 2017 that ended up on this record. And those were things that I would demo out on GarageBand in my bedroom.
And Zach hit me up to play leads because there was like the first 8 songs that were written and recorded, which I helped produce. Zach's like, it's missing something, and asked me to do leads. So then I just put the MP3s and threw leads on it for the first 8. And 2 of them didn't make it. And then we wrote 4 more. Yeah, and then those 4 we wrote together. And those kind of did happen in a practice space. But gotcha. Most of the time it's we're just kind of by ourselves. And then when the thing's almost done, we bring it to each other.
Yeah, I'd seen something about one of your posts like a while ago about it being like an 8-song album, and so I was curious how that kind of ended up switching up. So that's really interesting. And how was it for you, like coming into the band while they were, you know, so far along in the process?
Oh, I mean, I was producing it. I produced the last EP too, and even the first one as well. I was there.
Yes, you definitely.
So were. Yeah, so I've been there since basically the first day of recording. And I go to 80% of the shows as much as I can. No, because I was a huge fan, and like just wanted to help out my friends as much as possible. So I knew the dynamic. I hang out with the guys all the time. I had a specific job for a while called Weedside, and whenever Zach needed a little pick me up during the set, hand him over a little something, and that was my job. I was a microphone holder for a day. I did every job, and there's a lot of room for growth in this company, and I'm living proof.
Started and then worked his way up. Now we're talking to each other.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And you mentioned like how it kind of took a long time for some of these songs to come together. Like all the songs are pretty much at the 2-minute or less mark. Is that kind of a self-imposed constraint, or is that just more how the songs naturally come together?
For me, I get very bored of playing the same things over and over again. And also I'm not the best songwriter in the world either. So a lot of the ones that I write don't have a chorus or a verse necessarily. It's just kind of throwing it all together real fast, and then at some point I write the music, I write out the lyrics, I get a good idea of what I want it to be, and that's it.
And since being in this band for almost a year now, I've been helping like songwriting. I have one and a half songs on the record. Me and Zach collabed on one. My ability to write a song over 2 minutes is now completely shattered since being in this band.
I did have noticed that I did influence the rest of my boys in a way that is, I don't know. I like it personally. I don't know if everybody likes it, but truthfully, like it's not really a bit. A lot of people think it's like a bit, like, oh, none of these songs are, or all the ones that you write aren't longer than 2 minutes or anything. It's like, yeah, it's not a joke. I just get pretty bored of what I'm doing. I want to make more.
If it more sounds in it, because we can go like all over the place.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Since the songs are kind of like on the shorter end, does that like give you time to kind of like pay more attention to certain aspects of the song, or like does it affect kind of like the songwriting process as far as like you know, like going over them again and again and stuff?
In a way, I suppose. I think it helps us create more. So there's
like with the 8 songs that we had originally, we were totally fine with throwing away 2 of them because we had so much more in the canon.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, someone's not gonna be too hurt if we go, okay, this one's gonna get cut, but then there's another one that's gonna be right around the corner. So.
Yeah.
So it kind of like speeds up the songwriting process and allows you to, you know, kind of see what sticks, sort of.
Yeah, I would say that. So for instance, when we went back to record the another 4 songs, one of those didn't make it, I believe, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
So one of them didn't make it, but then at the same time we had I had 2 more that were pretty much ready to go at that point. I think Zach had another one that might have ended up on it as well. Yeah, it's in a way of like of we are a big fan of quantity, and it's also very funny, I think, just to have the shortest
quantity
LP.
Or quality. Which one are we a fan of?
I don't know. I think we have a delicate balance of quantity, and they're all really dope.
Yeah, and the best part is like about having like 14 songs or 16 songs, whatever we had. And at the Arsenal, we can make a more cohesive album. Like, if something didn't really, like, make sense, like, we can make a better album since we have more songs to pick from.
Yes, yeah, I would agree with that. And then, as Nikki mentioned before, style is kind of, like, a little bit different, but it's you can still tell that it's uniquely one of our songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's kind of, like, quantity in the songwriting and then quality in the overall finished product.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way of phrasing that we definitely didn't say.
And then we've obviously like hit on a couple times kind of like the role of comedy in the music and like the idea of you starting the band to kind of just have fun. But there's also, I would say, like a social consciousness. Like you're pretty like outspoken on like Twitter about like the state of the music industry and like the name of the album kind of referring to like marginalized people of encouraging them to follow their passions and stuff.
Well, yeah, there's a thing that you just notice when you're a person of color that you'll look around the room and realize you're the darkest one in that room. And I have just tan skin. Like I'm not even like a very dark skinned person. So there's just sort of it's just a little. For instance, it took me a while to realize that I could play music, as in I had to go onto YouTube one day when I was maybe 16, 17 years old, stumble upon a video of this person named James who played under the moniker of the Michael character. He wrote a song. It was called Don't Call Me Your Asian Friend, and that connected with me. And he was playing in it. He was playing in a living room in Boston, I believe. Just surrounded by friends. And there was something in my brain that sort of clicked because I've been playing guitar in general since I was younger. I never really had any desire to ever write anything. Like I would just play along with songs that I knew. And then it took that moment to be seeing somebody who looked like me playing music for me to realize, oh, that looks like a lot of fun. I want to try and get involved with that. And I know that I can do it because this person who is also tan skin is doing it as well. And in regards to balancing that with the band, well, we don't play shows where I am the only marginalized individual performing that night. And we're pretty adamant about that.
If we have control, like if we have say,
control, if we have the ability to say it, of course, sometimes it's a little more difficult. We're currently booking a tour and we're going to places that we don't play that often, where we don't know that many people. So we can't. So I try to do as much research as I can on bands around the area or talk to some people. Even when I'm cold emailing like promoters, I will mention, you know, at the least amount of white men on the bill as possible would be wonderful. But in terms of like local gigs, like absolutely, if we're playing a show in Jersey where I know so many women, where I know so many black artists that exist, and there's all white boys on the bill, it's like I can't feel comfortable in that space doing that.
And you also do that with your booking as well.
I do that, yeah. I book a bunch of shows, and that's the other thing that I've started doing once again, where I'll I have one token white boy band, as I like to say, and that's it.
So you're kind of flipping the script then.
I'm trying to make a difference, and I'm hopeful, and I feel confident that I have an ability to make a difference.
And it's definitely reflected in the audience too.
I would agree.
For a college town that's usually 90% white men, Kyle's gigs are definitely the most diverse that I feel. which is like, you know,
I would agree with that.
That's like being the smartest ding dong, you know, because people don't really understand that in booking, but Kyle does the best job possible. So I'm really proud of Kyle for doing that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's super rad. And I you've also kind of been vocal on Twitter about kind of like the state of like the indie music like industry, for lack of a better word, I guess. Could you talk a little bit about like your kind of ideas behind that and like the, or like the DIY ethic and like stuff like that?
My biggest quarrel with DIY is that for every one band, there's at least six other people behind that band that are trying to profit off of that group. And that kind of, it takes away the feeling of community from me, for me personally, when somebody hits me up to book a show, for instance. And, you know, when I book gigs, there's money that comes through the door. It all goes to the bands. If there's a band on tour, they get first priority. If I make over a certain threshold of money that comes through the door, I try to pay out the locals as much as I can. There are people that do not do this, and that bothers me a lot. Like, I don't take any money that comes from the gigs that I book. And I'm very transparent about that.
Yeah, you post the figures on Facebook.
I do post the figures on Facebook. Yeah, on my personal Facebook page, I will post, like, I will say, like, so this group is on tour. They got, you know, X amount of funds from the door. The house, you know, I'm booking at other people's houses, and so they obviously have bills to pay. And, you know, running a show in the basement all night might, you know, that has some sort of impact on the bills and all. So I try to pay out houses, or I give them toilet paper if they ask,
which they're so stoked about,
and they are very excited when I show up and I say, hey, I have three rolls of toilet paper, and they go, oh, great. Yeah, in terms of the industry, you know, I'm not a hater on it. I understand that everybody has to make money in some way,
but profiting on a DIY level is
it's a little questionable, where yeah. It's like, are you doing this because you love it, or you're doing this because you love to make money and you don't want to get like another part-time gig or something else like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, speaking about the transparency that you have, I think that's like really cool. I think it benefits like both the bands and the fans, because it's like you kind of get a better idea of the overall state of things and like where your money's going and everything. I think that's like a really cool thing, and I haven't actually seen anyone else do that before.
Yeah, I think it's probably good reasons why nobody does that, honestly. And I'm not saying anybody doesn't necessarily, but I've witnessed some people skim a little off the top, and that's okay, I guess. It's just not the way that I like to conduct things. I don't think I should be paid for driving 5 minutes and sitting in front of on a porch all night, you know?
For sure. Yeah, and I mean, I guess kind of jumping off those kind of ideas, how does that kind of relate to the relationship with I Surrender Records, and how did that kind of start to form?
So they're very transparent with us.
Oh, they're excellent.
We know exactly what they're up to. We know exactly where the money is going, and they're just very, like when we first started working together, they definitely laid it all out. We signed a contract and it was 6 pages. Apparently that's very small for
a contract. It's supposed to be like 30 pages.
Yeah, apparently that's very small for label signing deals.
One of our band members had a lawyer look at it just for, you know, because they were worried. And the lawyer goes, you should go back to high school if you can't understand this contract.
It was very straightforward and written out. And when we did have questions, it was like a text message away and being like, hey, so what does this line mean exactly? And then they explained it to us.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, great.
And they've been nothing but nice. They have a great team over there. They have the CEO, which is a very nice fellow that was in a cool band growing up. We also have couple women behind scenes too, and like they're super helpful, and we're all in an email thread every day, all day, and we're in constant communication.
We follow each other on Instagram and everything, and we're like replying to each other's stories and all. It's the cutest relationship I've ever had with some people that I don't, you know.
Like, I'm worried, like, if we ever were to like go elsewhere, like, what's gonna happen? Like, this is so nice. Yeah. Everyone's so cool.
It's the most, I think we ended up in the most positive experience we could have had in regards to working with a record label.
For sure. Yeah. And I guess, how did that like kind of, how did you get, did you reach out to them first, or did they reach out to you? How did that kind of come together?
So Kai and I constructed cold emails, We knew some labels that we had friends with, or like had friends on the label. We had a couple of shirt things, and that just, we didn't really like the response or what was going to be given.
But we wanted vinyl records.
We wanted vinyl records at the end of the day.
And a lot of people did respond and say, hey, we love this music. We would love to distribute it. However, we're not going to be able to make you vinyl. And that's totally okay.
Yeah, we're not like, you know, big band that absolutely needed vinyls, but that's what a dream of ours was, to have our music pressed on vinyl. So we kind of just stuck it out a little bit, and we were actually almost didn't do the email that I surrendered, because I was like, I don't know, we don't know them. But
they were one of the Reach labels.
Yeah, they were like the Reach. We had a spreadsheet, and they're like Reach labels that you probably could get on, or that we know friends of. And I was like, I know what, let's do it. Let's shoot the email. And then they fell in love with the tracks, those 8 original tracks, and then we just started talking from there, and we got Mexican food, and it was excellent.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, like, I think the fact that I saw that they were the ones who tweeted out was kind of one of the reasons that I checked out the music, because, I mean, like, they put out, like, one of the I Am the Avalanche, or a couple of the I Am the Avalanche records, I think, but a couple of the 4 Year Strong stuff, like...
Avalanche record. Ooh,
yeah,
love it.
I'm still waiting for Vinny Caruana to hit me up. It's been like a week now.
He's going on that solo tour soon. You can confront him in person.
Oh, true. Oh, okay. Avalanche is the reason why Nikki and I are friends in the first place.
That's actually the absolute truth. Kyle was working at the radio station at Rutgers, and I was working at the media team for Rutgers. And someone came in and was like, someone's playing your old band. And I'm like, what? No. Why? And I go into the radio station, unannounced, on air, open the door, and I see Kai like, hey, like, were you wearing Avalanche or were you playing Avalanche after us?
I was playing Avalanche.
You were playing Avalanche after us. I'm like, oh, you like Avalanche? And we haven't stopped talking to each other since.
And we're best friends now.
So it's so weird that, like, came full circle that we'd be on a label with the alumnus of I Am the Avalanche.
Yeah, right.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I feel like they're kind of like this kind of weird band that's kind of like a little bit under the radar, but the people who like them like really love them. And like, I've made a lot of connections with people just over that band. I wanted to, or I was curious, could you talk a little bit about the single Ankle Biter and like the music video that goes along with it?
All right. So the thing I'm most proud of about Ankle Biter is not the fact that we took like what, 15 hours, 20 hours to do the claymation or stop motion with 1500 pictures. I think it's the fact that we captured 24 frames per second. I'm so proud of that. You know?
Yeah, I forgot the breakdown of that. So yeah, let's talk the music video first.
Yeah, we should.
Anything.
We should, right?
Yeah, so I just had a weird idea one day. I have a lot of weird ideas, and most of them get shut down because they're very odd. But this one stuck for some reason, where I came outside. So three of us live together. Let's get that out of the way. Three of us live together. I come outside, go see Nikki, and I say, hey, we should do Claymation. He goes, yeah, we should.
And I brought up, we should do a monster.
And then Nikki suggested we should make a monster. And I said, yeah, we should. And then, you know, 15 to 20 grueling hours later, 1500 shots later, you know, and it's, I work full time. I work full time on a farm, and I would come home every single day and just run into the basement and be like, all right, so we got to get this scene and this scene, right? And then Nikki, and we're, you know, stop motion is such a, it's such a beautiful art form, and it's so difficult to create.
It's tedious.
It's very tedious, and we're not professionals. We're doing it in a basement. I did not get the correct clay that you should be using for stop motion. And also, I did not realize that the clay puppets did not have to be completely made out of clay. So the monster weighs more than it should. the monster weighs like a solid pound or two,
yeah,
which is way too heavy for stop motion. So it's falling apart. And in between that and me accidentally knocking over a piece midway through the scene, it's like, well, we got to go delete all of these photos and redo the whole scene. It was a process, to say the least.
But it was still fun because, like, at first it was like an art project because we were, like, cutting out things and making the set. And it was so lighthearted and so fun. And then actually doing it, it's like, kind of grueling. But then again, we're lucky that our songs are so short. If that was a 2-minute video, we wouldn't be done with it.
We wouldn't have done it, honestly.
That's awesome. And I saw one of your Instagram posts recently, how you're saying like, oh, bands don't usually share their live songs, but we're lucky enough that our songs can fit into their format. So that's like, that really works out for you.
my friend Jesse was able to get the whole song, and then I was able to post the whole song on Instagram.
and that's really cool, like the dedication and like the passion around just like the idea kind of just coming from, or the video just coming from like a fun idea and just you being just like, hell yeah, let's do it. Like, and that kind of goes back to the beginning of the band, how you started it.
I'm a big believer that we can do almost anything, and well, anybody almost can do anything, really. We're experimenting a lot with some other creative effects, and we're currently trying to learn how to do one that might take a minute, but we'll figure it out.
It might be like the third music video.
It might not be perfect either, but we're not aiming for perfect. We're looking for, can we do it?
That's also the beauty of this band is like, it doesn't have to be perfect. We could just play power chords and just have fun. And like, our videos can reflect that. And that's what we like about Ankle Biters, that it's a very silly idea. And it looks like it's not perfect. A 14-year-old could have made it. But nope, it was a 27-year-old and a 23-year-old.
And I guess this kind of ties in a little bit, I guess, the way you were talking about that. Kind of like, and also something that stood out to me was like the, you're posting about like the Chorus FM comments kind of, I guess kind of like raking the band a little bit, and how you were saying you were going to put it on merch, and kind of like this self-depreciating like aspects of it, or kind of like the jovial, like kind of like making fun of yourselves. Can you talk a little bit about like that kind of mindset?
So our drummer Zach said, oh, our friend saw like this awesome thread on Absolute Punk. And I'm like, about the song? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, Absolute Punk's not a thing. It's Chorus FM. So, okay, maybe they just got the website wrong. Let me go look for these, you know, very nice comments. And the first thing I see is this Raiders logo, 333 gang.
333 gang, that's our dude forever.
Whoever that is, like, you get
they're,
a free
they're
shirt.
They're amazing.
You get a free shirt, you get a record, you just gotta hit us up. We're so happy. And like, I've been going to Chorus FM like every week, or Absolute Punk back in the day, since I was like very young, and it was just very exciting. I knew like the comment threads were kind of like harsh sometimes, and for us to have like a harsh comment meant that like, oh yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it, baby.
It's a somewhat humbling moment where it's like, well, none of us are walking around. I mean, I am, but I have an ego. But none of us are like walking around like, oh, we're the best in the world. Like, everyone's going to love this, blah, blah, blah. And then to see that comment is just the funniest thing to me.
Especially after thinking it's going to be a nice comment. Like, someone's like, oh, she made comments. It's really nice. And I don't know if they're messing with me or whatever, but it was the best. And I showed Kai, and Kai died laughing immediately.
Yeah, and then I said, hey, let's get it on a shirt. That's amazing. And it's also the first time anybody has ever expressed their, like, hatred of this group. I don't even know if they listened to the track at all.
Oh, they didn't.
Yeah, right? They probably didn't. Right?
No, they didn't. They said our track listing was bad, and our banding was bad, and that makes them not want to listen to
it. Yeah, so they
it.
Never listened to us at all. So then again, it's like the perspective of like, well, what do you know? And also, I don't really care. But also, this is very funny.
Did you see that Hard Times article today? It was like, band's great band name misled with band's music. And I'm like, that's the opposite of Steve. We have the worst band name, but music's okay.
We fully believe in everything that we do. We're if I always say it to my boys that I'm like, look, we're gonna put all of our hearts into this. We're gonna put all of our effort into it, and if it flops, then we're gonna put all our effort into that flop.
I think that's like a really cool mindset to have, and like the fact that someone's making a bad comment about you is still like they took the effort to make a comment about you, and in some ways that's rad too.
Yeah, I think so. I appreciate that.
I appreciate honesty.
I like it too. I would rather somebody do that than praise me, you know? I can be like, oh, you're so great and blah, 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 and all this other. Like, I also like praise as well. I'm not saying I don't like praise, but I do like those moments because it's like, that's funny.
And I think just kind of like the lighthearted aspects of the band are like something that if you're on board for it, it's like, that's a really fun thing as a fan too. So I think that's like kind of a special thing too.
Yeah. I like including everybody into the process of this whole thing. So if we get a bad comment, you're going to see it. If we get a cool looking record, you're going to see that too.
It's time for this week's mid-show shadow. Today, I want to highlight Bizarre Albums. This podcast by Tony Thaxton is like going dollar bin diving at your local record store, or flipping through dusty vinyl at Goodwill. Each week highlights a different WTF album, and explains how and why it was made in a concise and well-researched way. They've already covered albums by The Simpsons, Bruce Willis, Shaq, and more. Check it out, and if you need even more, contribute to their Patreon for bonus Bizarre Singles episodes.
I like kind of wrapping up by asking for either like a piece of advice or an observation you've made recently, either about like music or just life in general that you would like to share with listeners.
Don't be afraid to reach out. I got a mentor recently for my, for like a job searching and like a this video production guy who, ironically enough, knows our record label guy and played with his ska band and booked his ska band back in like the early 2000s and late 90s, and he's been super helpful, and like we reached out for the label and that was a cold email, and you never know until you ask or try. And I've been talking to this guy like every week now, and he's super chill. So if there's so if anything, like that's what I learned like the last 2 weeks is like you can go for it, just like do it, ask, and see if it goes anywhere. If it doesn't, then you're still in the same spot.
I think my message is the title of the record. You can do this too. I wholly believe that if you really want to do something, of course there's complications that come in the way along with it, and I'm very much a lucky person to be in the position where I am and where I can afford to go out and play music every single weekend. But I wholly believe that there's opportunities that we can all take, and I think we should just do it.
That's our most wholesome answer we've had all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great, and I think like that speaks to me a lot too. Like that's kind of both of those things are kind of like the mindset that I had coming into the podcast, and like kind of just trying to hit the ground running and start doing it whichever way I could. And as this will be, I think like episode 8 that you guys will be on, and I've kind of been like slowly refining it as things go and stuff. And I don't know, it's worked out really well.
Nice. Well, that's the thing. If you try, you don't know until you try it.
Yeah,
so why not try it?
Did you bring this up to your publication, or did they ask you to do this?
I brought it up to, because I was kind of having like just a lot. It was being like, it was hard for me to do writing because I don't know why. I was just kind of like hitting that kind of block for a while, and it was really stressing me out because I was like, I wanted to talk to bands and I wanted to get the word out about bands. But I would do the interviews and then I would sit on them for weeks and just like not have the motivation to transcribe them and then turn them into an article and stuff. So I was like, okay, well, what can I do to continue doing what I want? And then I was like, okay, a podcast would be great. And so then I brought it up to Henderson, who runs The Alternative, and he was like, yeah, that'd be rad. Like, we can definitely throw it up on our Mixcloud and promote it along with the radio shows and stuff. And then it just kind of, it came together like super quickly once I had the idea and everything.
Yeah, that's dope. And like candid conversations like this is where you find out the most, I feel, versus like pen and paper, I feel.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, especially with like email interviews too. Like I've always tried to do phone interviews and to some extent in-person interviews, like as much as possible, because it's so much easier to get your message across when you're talking and able to have that time to like process it in your head than to just like kind of be like, okay, well, I don't want to be super long-winded, so let me write this couple sentences and, you know, stuff like that. Because you guys have the style of the shorter songs, I wanted to kind of wrap up with a special lightning round, just asking a few quick fire questions and getting quick answers.
Okay, okay.
Okay, so what's your favorite album?
Of all time?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Last Light, Past, Present, Future. No, Past, Present, or Future.
Yeah, I'll take that answer too because I can't name any off the top of my head and my music taste changes monthly.
Favorite movie?
Oh, Snowpiercer? Snowpiercer is like a very post-apocalyptic film. I believe it was, I don't want to say this actually, but Chris Evans is in it and he's very attractive.
Anything that's shot within 24 frames is my favorite.
Favorite comedian?
Oh, me and Kyle love comedy. We're gonna slow down this lightning round. We see comedy once a month. We try to.
Yeah. Roy Wood Jr. I like him a lot, and I like Tig Notaro.
Has to be John Mulaney, which he's mainstream now, but I do love John Mulaney and a Comedy Bang Bang podcast. Shout out Scott.
Let's see. Spiciest food you've ever eaten?
I don't really go that spicy normally. I've eaten a ghost pepper though one time, and that was like, apparently that's not even that hot. But I think that's the spiciest thing I'll ever consume in my life.
I had the spiciest, like the of Blackbird, like the highest spice one, and me and Alex could handle it. And I'm like, wow, I'm such a wimp. So that's that.
Did you regret it?
Oh, absolutely. It was a bad 2 days. Heartburn city.
Imagine if we said the fire sauce packet from Hot Dogs.
Let's see. Oh, what do you like most about yourself?
I wear dope shoes. I wear dope sneakers.
My white teeth are really fucking white.
And how many fingers am I holding up?
7.
16.
3.
Yeah.
And final question, when does the album come out? 5, 4, 3, 2,
November 1. November 8th.
Perfect. Friday. Nailed it.
That's all, folks. Episode 8 of Flying the Call is another success. Take a couple of minutes when you can to check Steve out, and if you like what you hear, maybe give You Can Do This Too a pre-order. Thanks to Kyle and Nick for being a joy to talk to and making this another great episode. And thanks to you for listening. A special thank you, as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod. Every Monday, I post a hint at the next guest, and if you get it right, you'll get to hear the episode early. So check it out. Feel free to email questions, comments, or other feedback to me at flyonthecallpod@gmail.com. I'll be back with another episode next week. Fly on the call.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.